Stitch dazzle data flow swirling through your radio. A smash flash drastic splastic show called the Ed Shep Radio Experiment. A sweet spice super sizzle sparkle snow. An audio beep show by Van Gogh. So slide right up and say hello to the Ed Shep Radio Experiment. In your ear, sprinkling through your sonorosphere, blasting past the last frontier, the Ed Shep Radio Experiment. A grand slam, no spam, glamboree, flea free, TNT, glee, times three.
It all starts out with an E.
The Ed Shep Radio Experiment.
Ed Shep Radio Experiment. Ed Shep Radio Experiment. Ed Shep Radio Experiment.
Welcome to the Ed Shep Radio Experiment. The theme this week is noise. In common use, the word noise means unwanted sound or noise pollution. In electronics, noise can refer to the electronic signal corresponding to an acoustic noise in an audio system, or the electronic signal corresponding to the visual noise commonly seen as snow on a degraded television or video image. In signal processing or computing, it can be considered data without meaning. That is, data that is not being used to transmit a signal, but is simply produced as an unwanted byproduct of other activities. In information theory, however, noise is still considered to be information. In a broader sense, the film grain, or even advertisements in web pages, can be considered noise. In many of these areas, the special case of thermal noise arises, which sets a fundamental lower limit to what can be measured or signaled, and is related to basic physical processes at the molecular level described by well-known simple formulae. Acoustic noise. When speaking of noise in relation to sound, what is commonly meant is meaningless sound of greater than usual volume. Thus, a loud activity may be referred to as noisy. However, conversations of other people may be called noise for people not involved in any, and noise may be unwanted sounds, such as the noise of aircraft, neighbors playing loud music, or road noise spoiling the quiet of the countryside. In audio recording and broadcast systems, audio noise refers to the residual low-level sound, usually hiss and hum, that is heard in quiet periods of program. In audio engineering, it can also refer to the unwanted residual electronic noise signal that gives rise to acoustic noise heard as hiss. Electronic noise. Electronic noise exists in all circuits and devices as a result of thermal noise, also referred to as Johnson noise. Semiconductor devices can also contribute flipper noise and generation recombination noise. In any electronic circuit, there exist random variations in current or voltage caused by the random movement of the electrons carrying the current as they are jolted around by thermal energy. The lower the temperature, the lower this thermal noise. The same phenomenon limits the minimum signal that any radio receiver can usefully respond to, because there will always be a small but significant amount of thermal noise arising in its input circuits. This is why radio telescopes, which search for very low levels of signal from stars, use front-end, low-noise amplifier circuits, usually mounted on the aerial dish, cooled in liquid nitrogen to a very low temperature. Environmental noise. Environmental noise is the collection of offending sounds to which humans are involuntarily exposed. The principal sources of environmental noise are motor vehicles, aircraft, and, increasingly, entertainment from live or reproduced music. Environmental noise is commonly referred to as noise pollution. Environmental noise is governed by noise regulations, which set maximum recommended levels of sound levels for specific land uses, such as residential areas, schools, areas of outstanding natural beauty, or or factories. These standards often specify measurement using a weighting filter, most often a weighting, but in many cases this is not appropriate as it gives a reduced response to low frequency sounds and does not take into account the increased annoyance value of bass boom for modern pop music, which penetrates walls and windows more easily than higher frequencies. Standards for the measurement of entertainment noise are currently confused, and several research projects have recently set out to determine a valid method. There are significant noise health effects, both psychological and physiological. Environmental noise is usually measured in decibels because of the great dynamic range of the human ear. Industrial noise. Industrial noise is usually considered mainly from the point of view of environmental health rather than nuisance, as sustained exposure causes permanent hearing damage. A-weighted measurements are commonly used for this as well, and special exposure meters are available that integrate noise over a period of time to a given value, defined by standards. In the case of industrial noise affecting nearby residences or other sensitive receptors, the phenomenon is considered noise pollution. Radio noise. Radio noise is interference picked up between transmitter and receiver output, often referred to as static. Radio noise can be caused by virtually any electromagnetic source, from lighting to man-made electronics, including the receiver itself. Transmitter power must be increased to overcome radio noise over long distances. Video noise. In video and television, noise refers to the random dot pattern that is superimposed on the picture as a result of electronic noise, the snow that is seen with poor television reception or on VHS tapes. Interference and static are other forms of noise in the sense that they are unwanted, though not random, which can affect radio and television signals.
When trying to get a message across, we have to cut through a lot of noise.
The noise of our everyday life.
How does your marketing message cut through the noise?
The most notable physical effect of noise exposure is loss of hearing. Noise-induced hearing loss affects children, adolescents, young adults, and older adults. The National Institute on Deafness and Other Communication Disorders, the National Institutes of Health, the National Institute on Environmental Health Sciences, and the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health have noted that, because of noise in our society, hearing loss is appearing much earlier in life than would have been expected just 30 years ago. Noise not only affects hearing, it affects other parts of the body and body systems. It is now known that noise increases blood pressure, has negative cardiovascular effects such as changing the way the heart beats, increases breathing rate, disturbs digestion, can cause an upset stomach or ulcer, can negatively impact a developing fetus, perhaps contributing to premature birth, makes it difficult to sleep even after the noise stops, and intensifies the effects of factors like drugs, alcohol, aging, and carbon monoxide. Research is ongoing and continues to provide data suggesting the devastating effects of noise on health. Research is also investigating factors that may contribute to one's susceptibility to noise-induced hearing loss.
Other changes that can be induced by noise.
Noise can also hamper performance of daily tasks, increase fatigue, and cause irritability. Noise can reduce efficiency in performing daily tasks by reducing attention to tasks. This is a concern of employers when it comes to assuring worker safety. It is also a concern to a growing number of educators interested in human learning. Because of noise, we often find ourselves fatigued and irritable. We don't even realize the effect until the noisy hubbub stops and we feel relieved. From another perspective, your own inability to hear and understand others clearly can cause you to feel angry and frustrated. Instead of accepting the problem as yours, you misdirect your feelings to others and blow up at them. Noise also makes speech communication more difficult. more concentration and energy is needed not only to listen and hear over the noise, but also to speak louder above the noise. As a result, voices can be strained and vocal cord abuses develop. It is a physical strain to carry on even an enjoyable conversation in the presence of noise. One demonstration of the effects of noise on behavior was done by recording how passersby responded to a person in need in the presence of noise. While a noisy lawnmower was running, a woman with a broken arm dropped some books and tried to pick them up. No one stopped to help her. When the lawnmower was turned off and the scene repeated, several people stopped to help her retrieve the books. Researchers have also looked at the effect of excessive noise in school classrooms and have drawn conclusions that are seemingly obvious yet often minimized. In one study, test results of students from a school near railroad tracks were compared to results of students far away from the tracks. Students at the quiet school performed better on the test. Another study found that students whose classrooms face noisy streets do not do as well in school as students in classrooms facing away from noisy streets. Finally, another study demonstrated that noise distracts both teachers and students. There is no question that noise is both a public health hazard and an environmental pollutant as well. Many of its effects are well known, and many of its effects continue to unfold through research.
I've become interested in one man's noise is another man's signal. And if you find that the noise has some interesting geophysical origin, you might learn something very interesting. And I suddenly plead guilty to having done so.
What's that noise?
What?
That isn't my thing acting up.
Some kind of a whistle I hear.
Is that the clock?
I don't hear it. So I think it sounds like a car, like somebody backing out or something.
It's that.
I think it's outside, David.
It sounds like it's that way to me.
It sounds like it's that way to me.
I always think somebody's hurt.
Well, that's a possibility. But usually if it's a fire department, that means a house is on fire, doesn't it? Usually.
Anything
no,
can be on
people
fire.
Hurt, too. Oh.
Gee, there's a lot of them.
Police and ambulance are responding.
Maybe it's a drug bust.
We can have a fire truck.
Imagine that every time someone on your street mowed the grass, or every time an airplane passed overhead, your yard was filled with a nauseating smell. Suppose this same odor seeped into your bedroom at 3 a.m. when a motorcycle went by, and again at 6 when a building contractor started dropping bundles of rebar on the street. Suppose indeed that this stink was around you for 24 hours a day, sometimes stronger,
sometimes not so strong,
but always there, making your life unpleasant, destroying your ability to experience pleasant aromas, and perhaps even making you ill. Would our society tolerate activities that really did generate such an odor? Of course not. Yet we show an amazing tolerance for a form of pollution that is every bit as disturbing and harmful. Noise. Attention has recently been focused on the problem of seaplanes taking off and landing in Victoria Harbor, to the acute discomfort of nearby householders. But even if some mitigation is found for that problem, it will be like taking a bucket of water out of the Red River in flood. Airplane traffic is increasing by 5% a year. Urban noise is doubling every 8 to 10 years. By air, land, and sea, we are facing an onslaught of noise that threatens to make our world unlivable. As a society, we have chosen to make a trade-off. We've been willing to tolerate a certain amount of noise for the sake of having what we see as benefits. Things like motorized travel, labor-saving machines, and amplified sound at community events. We have essentially granted ourselves the right to make noise. But along with rights, as is often said, come responsibilities. Have we developed a sense of acoustic responsibility in our society? The evidence suggests that we have not. Surveys among high school students show that the majority believe they have an unlimited right to make noise. Boom cars and chopper motorcycles indicate that this attitude prevails among adults as well. Jet skis and other loud watercraft have turned our lakes, formerly pleasant refuges, into places of misery for anyone who doesn't want to join in the mechanized fun. Stereos with super amplified bass are turning houses with common walls into torture chambers, to such an extent that Britain has had to pass a law precisely to protect tenants and council housing from the nighttime music of their neighbors. The examples can be multiplied endlessly. Scheduled aircraft flying in and out of the harbor may be seen as a necessary evil. But what about the unnecessary evils of banner-towing aircraft, or sightseers flying in low circles over the city at midnight, or the scheduled flights between the harbor and Vancouver that fly directly over the city many times a day, affecting tens of thousands of people in order to spare a dozen passengers the expense of a detour over the water? I would suggest that all these abuses exist only because we have not yet developed the awareness that we are responsible for the noise we produce. It's widely accepted that we have responsibility for our garbage. Drop a candy wrapper on the ground and you are potentially liable to a stiff fine. But haul out your gas-powered leaf blower to clean a little dust off the driveway while spreading acoustic garbage over a square mile or more, and you are applauded for keeping your home tidy and presentable. Isn't there something wrong with our values here? Noise is garbage. And it is a particularly insidious form of garbage. It destroys community life, pursues us into our homes, keeps us from sleeping, and is a cause of many stress-related illnesses as well as hearing loss. The current destruction of silence in our world is an environmental catastrophe. Yet even the environmental movement seems oblivious to it, as evidenced by the huge speakers erected at Earth Day celebrations across the nation, putting out music and speeches that literally deafening volumes. Why? Because the organizers of these events, along with the people responsible for similar abuses in nightclubs and at concerts of all kinds, do not recognize that with the power granted by those huge sound systems comes the responsibility to use them in a safe and courteous manner. The soundscape, our acoustic environment, has been described as a commons, something that belongs to all of us. Everyone has the right to use it, but no one has the right to abuse it. Let's start using it responsibly.
Can you hear it? That noise. It's been driving me potty all day. I woke up this morning in my usual lively way. Who never fell in love. Would you please try and stop that noise? Will somebody please try and stop that noise? It's all right, but I can't stand the noise.
Callers of noise. The caller names for different types of noise are derived from an analogy between the spectrum of frequencies of sound wave present in the sound and the equivalent spectrum of light wave frequencies. That is, if the sound wave pattern of blue noise were translated into light waves, the resulting light would be blue, and so on. White noise. White noise is a signal or process with a flat frequency spectrum in linear space. In other words, the signal has equal power in any linear band at any center frequency having a given bandwidth. For example, the 20 Hz frequency range between 40 and 60 Hz contains the same amount of power at the range between 4000 and 4020 Hz. An infinite bandwidth white noise signal is purely a theoretical construct. By having power at all frequencies, the total power of such a signal would be infinite, 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 infinite. In practice, a signal is white if it has a flat spectrum over a defined frequency band. Here is an example of white noise. Pink noise. The frequency spectrum of pink noise is flat in logarithmic space. It has equal power in bands that are proportionally wide. That means that pink noise would have equal power in the frequency range from 40 to 60 hertz as in the band from 4,000 to 6,000 hertz. Since humans hear in such a proportional space, where a doubling of frequency is seen as the same size regardless of actual frequency, 40 to 60 hertz is heard as the same interval and distance as 4,000 to 6,000 hertz. Every octave contains the same amount of energy, and thus pink noise is often referred to as a reference signal in audio engineering. That is, the human auditory system perceives approximately equal magnitude on all frequencies. The power density compared with white noise decreases by 3 decibels per octave. This is what pink noise sounds like. Brown noise is similar to pink noise, but with a power density decrease of 6 decibels per octave, with increasing frequency over a frequency range which does not include DC. It can be generated by an algorithm which simulates Brownian motion, or by integrating white noise. Brown noise is not named for a power spectrum that suggests the color brown. Rather, the name is a corruption of Brownian motion, also known as random walk or drunkard's walk noise. This is what brown noise sounds like. Blue noise's power density increases 3 decibels per octave with increasing frequency over a finite frequency range. In computer graphics, the term blue noise is sometimes used more loosely as any noise with minimal low frequency components and no concentrated spikes in energy. This can be good noise for dithering. Retinal cells are arranged in a blue noise-like pattern for this reason. Blue noise sounds like this. Purple noise. Its power density increases 6 decibels per octave with increasing frequency over a finite frequency range. It is also known as differentiated white noise or violet noise.
Let's give it a listen.
Gray noise is subjected to a psychoacoustic equal loudness curve, such as an inverted A weighting curve, over a given range of frequencies, so that it sounds like it is equally loud at all frequencies. Some people would say that this would be a better definition of white noise than the equal power at all frequencies definition, since white light never has an equal power spectrum, but rather can have a range of spectra. This is what gray noise sounds like. There are many other less official colors. Red noise, for example, has more than one definition. It could be a synonym for brown noise, a synonym for pink noise, or oceanic ambient noise, that is, noise from different sources, that is often described as red due to the selective absorption of higher frequencies by the ocean. Orange noise. noise. Orange noise is quasi-stationary noise with a finite power spectrum with a finite number of small bands of zero energy dispersed throughout a continuous spectrum. These bands of zero energy are centered around the frequencies of musical notes in whatever scale is of interest. Since all in-tune musical notes are eliminated, the remaining spectrum could be said to consist of sour, citrus, or orange notes. Orange noise is most easily generated by a room full of primary school students equipped with plastic soprano recorders. Green noise. Green noise is supposedly the background noise of the world, a really long-term power spectrum averaged over several outdoor sites, rather like pink noise with a hump added around 500 Hz. It is also described as the mid-frequency component of white noise, used in half-tone dithering, and bounded brown noise. AC power hum. AC-powered appliances can give off a characteristic hum at multiples of the frequency of AC power that they use. This noise is normally an unwanted signal. It is very different from the other examples in that it has a very specific spectrum, 50 or 60 Hz depending on the local power frequency, plus harmonics. For American AC power, a spectral analysis indicates massive spikes at 60 Hz and harmonics, with very few other frequency components. All of the other spectra ramp their power as a function of frequency, including all frequencies at various power levels. Here is an example of 60 Hz electricity hum.
And the devil makes the loudest noise, there's no doubt about it. And the devil makes the loudest noise, there's no doubt about it. And the devil makes the loudest noise, there's no doubt about it.
The shrill cry of a baby can be one of the most annoying sounds of daily life, but it is music to Pentagon strategists. An electronics company, American Technology Corp., has turned the wail of a baby into a weapon that fires sonic bullets, narrow beams of noise that exceed the human threshold of pain. It can incapacitate people or compel them to flee. It gives you the equivalent of an intense migraine headache, said Elwood G. Norris, the company's chairman and inventor of the device. It's totally disabling. Norris uses 50 different soundtracks, or sonic bullets, in his new weapon. For instance, it plays backward the sound of a baby crying at 140 decibels, or 20 decibels above the threshold of pain. The noise level is similar to that of a passenger jet taking off. Pentagon officials see many uses for Norris's invention, such as controlling unruly crowds, foiling hijackers, and keeping potential suicide bombers at bay. A commercial variant may also have applications in movie theaters, vending machines, and retail stores. The sound technology is not the first time that Norris has made waves. Prolific inventor, he developed and patented a Doppler system that is a key component of ultrasonic imaging technology. He also invented the first digital sound recording device, as well as a microwave radar that can detect plastic landmines. The acoustic weapon is categorized by the Pentagon as non-lethal, but it could damage hearing or cause psychological harm. It is one of the more innovative devices among the non-lethal weapons the military is developing, analysts said. They're very intrigued by these non-lethal weapons, said Lauren Thompson, a defense analyst with the Lexington Institute think tank in Arlington, Virginia.
Some acoustic weapons are so powerful that they can knock you out.
Weapons makers have been developing a non-lethal arsenal for decades, but new advances in microwave and acoustic technology, as well as post-September 11th security concerns, have raised interest in such weapons. The signal emitted by the acoustic weapon can penetrate any opening and bounce off surfaces before reaching the intended targets. In Afghanistan, it could have been used to drive out enemy soldiers holed up in caves and buildings. It could help an airline pilot fend off hijackers without harming the aircraft or bystanders. And it could help military ships protect their perimeters and ports. Sailors protecting Navy ships don't have anything between giving a verbal warning and shooting a potential threat, said Terry Conrad, American Technologies president. Now you have something else you can use before taking lethal action. Despite years of research on sound harassment weapons, Pentagon officials say this is the first time soldiers will be able to direct the harassing sound at a particular individual or target. A significant feature of the device is the fact that the person standing behind or next to the emitter can't hear the sound. It is heard only by the person who is in the sound emitter's line of fire. In previous efforts to use sound as a weapon, soldiers could not shield themselves from the irritating noise they were directing at a target. When the army tried to get Panama's former dictator, Manuel Noriega, to surrender by blaring harassing music and sounds outside to his retreat, U.S. soldiers also complained. American Technology's weapon is based on a beaming technology that Norris has been trying to perfect for more than 7 years. Known as the hypersonic sound system, it is also creating a major buzz within the commercial acoustics industry. Unlike a traditional speaker, which produces sound by vibrating the membranes of a woofer or a tweeter, small crystal wafers project a beam of sound across a room like a spotlight. The emitters are semiconductors used by Norris in a configuration that produces focused sound waves. The device sends out two ultrasonic signals that produce sound only when they hit an object or a person. An emitter pointed at a wall will produce a sound that seems to be coming from the wall, not the emitter. However, a person who is not in the line of the beam will not hear anything unless the beam has bounced off the wall. In a recent test of the device in the company's parking lot, a reporter stood about 100 feet from the emitter and could hear a radio broadcast as though it were coming from within the ear. Norris then pointed the emitter at a nearby window, and it seemed as though the sound were coming from within the building. Giant retailers are swarming to buy the product, Norris said. The company is negotiating with an unidentified beverage company for a 1-year exclusive right to use the device in soda vending machines. The company envisions a potential soda buyer standing in front of a vending machine, or a passerby hearing the sound of a can opening and the soda fizzing as it is poured into a glass. The sound won't be heard by anyone else. After 7 years of research and development, American Technology recently received Food and Drug Administration approval to begin marketing the product. The FDA determined that the new sound technology does not have adverse health effects. The weapons version, which does not require FDA approval, uses high-intensity emitters specifically designed for the Pentagon. The Navy has been testing the technology on the U.S. missile destroyer Winston Churchill as a way to communicate on board as well as ship-to-ship during bad weather and when security concerns preclude radio use. A typical Navy ship's sound system has about 3,000 speakers, many of them producing sounds that are muffled or drowned out by other noise. Stereo equipment manufacturers are also looking at the technology. The system would allow individuals in a car to listen to different music without using headphones, and movie theater operators would be able to project the system off the screens, giving the audience the illusion that the sound is coming from the actor's mouths. Norris said revenue from previous inventions is funding his new research. American Technology is acquiring an electronics manufacturer with 108,000 square feet of space that could produce 10,000 devices a month by October. A simple version of the commercial system will sell for $200 to $300. The sound technology is the future for us, Norris said.
to the latest Bose technology, it is now possible to have, for the first time, the same noise reduction benefits in an on-ear headphone as we have achieved in the award-winning Quiet Comfort 2 around-ear headphone. And now you can choose your preferred style. Or when you hit the books, use them to unwind at home, to soothe the tension of a hectic day, or to let your music take you away to your own private space.
Just put them on, and it tends to just make the surroundings go away. It's extremely comfortable. Absolute true sound.
Peace. Remember that QC2s fit around your ears, and the new, smaller QC3s fit on your ears. Both use exclusive Bose technologies for a combination of noise reduction, audio quality, and comfortable fit you can't get elsewhere. Order your QC2 or the new, smaller QC3 headphones today, and get the same level of performance. Try them for 30 days risk-free with the Bose
You also get free shipping.
That's how you can make 12 easy payments with your credit with no interest charge.
Bose technology.
Noise cancellation technology is a growing field that capitalizes on the combination of disparate technological advancements. The purpose of the technology is to cancel, or at least minimize, unwanted sounds. Modern lives seem full of all sorts of noise, some of which are dangerous to our ears. In fact, many people, especially those who live and work in cities, have very little quiet time during the day. Noise cancellation technology aims to remedy the excess noise that we experience. Of course, there are already low-tech solutions to the problem. Earplugs and sound dampeners are available, but they are not very convenient nor very efficient. Noise cancellation tries to block the sound at the source instead of trying to prevent the sounds from entering our ear canals. Sounds travel through the air or through liquids in the form of waves. Sounds travel through the air or through liquids in the form of waves, and each of those waves has a particular shape. Noise cancelling technologies first rely on small microphones that detect the sounds in a given environment. A digital signal processor determines what sound wave is required to cancel the unwanted sound wave, and then it creates that sound and amplifies it through speakers or headphones. One way to understand this is to imagine a positive sound and a negative sound created at virtually the same time, and these two sounds cancel themselves out, thereby bringing the listener closer to silence. These technologies are in their early stages, and they cannot completely omit sounds, but improvements are consistently being introduced. The hope is that one day these technologies can be used to minimize all sorts of unwanted sounds around us. Imagine, for example, a lawnmower, hair dryer, or vacuum cleaner that included a noise-canceling system, thereby greatly reducing the unpleasantly loud sounds. Noise-canceling headphones are already available. The headphones cancel out unwanted ambient sounds, allowing the listener to focus solely on the music. The latest versions of these noise-canceling headphones work surprisingly well. And new applications are certainly on the horizon.
Store and one gets the usual shower from all the loudspeakers over one's head. Why? Because owners and managers of department stores hold the opinion that A, the customer's stay will be longer under the influence of music, which is perceived to be pleasant, and B, the sales will go up. That's what they think, so they hope. They refer to various studies, above all in English-speaking North America. Now, there is a new study which reveals this assumption to be erroneous. It is an expensive error because the carefully selected audio tapes cost a lot of money. I say nothing of the modern possibilities of subscribing to a complete customized house program via satellite. For money, of course. The experiment was carried out over 40 days in a supermarket in a Westphalian city. One day the music was on, the next day off, and so on in steady alteration. Over 50,000 people were observed in the test, and a study was made of A, the duration of the visit,
B,
how comfortable they felt,
and
C, the amount of sales on days with and without music. The outcome was conclusive. The customers stayed neither a longer nor a shorter time under the influence of the musical shower. On days without music, they felt fine.
It allows me to look at and select merchandise in more peace.
And not the slightest difference in sales could be detected. I find this result marvelous for several reasons. First, people cannot be manipulated arbitrarily, and whoever continuously burdens the environment with music must finally realize that the world will simply become numb. Second, when customers enter a department store, they are in all likelihood leaving the noisy world of the streets, and they feel good when embraced by a pleasant quiet in the store. Third, those who think they must reach into their customers' pockets by musical means, hoping to impair their ability to judge and decide, are shown the red card. Shopping is a matter of discernment and not of irrational moods. And fourth, the limits of seduction through music are being exposed. The study, published in the yearbook of the German Society for Music Psychology, could mean long overdue relief for all those who have to work for 8 or 9 hours in a store. The end of a subtle
crime against humanity.
Ed Shep Radio Experiment. Thank you for listening and tune in next week. This is Ed Shep signing off. You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org.